Hello.
Podcast Network Asia.
We now continue with part two of The Haunting, Murder from Beyond the Grave, a three-part series on the last 24 hours.
Before the much-anticipated launch, Hollywood celebrities and bigwigs started getting invitations to the first international film festival in Manila. The New York Times reported that Christopher Reeves, Jodie Foster, and Charlton Heston were invited, but declined to attend after being frightened away by a letter they received from a group in the Philippines called the April 6th and Freedom Fighter Movement. The contents of the letter suggested that it would not be safe to attend and read, "We are sending you this advance notice so you can adopt extra precaution. Better yet, please do not attend the film festival." According to the article, the letter specifically mentioned that the center had partially collapsed, killing as many as 24 workers in November. Reports of that tragic incident would later put the casualty to 168 workers. 6 years before the EDSA revolution would overthrow the Marcos regime, the phrase, "what the First Lady wants, the First Lady gets," had a menacing connotation. And in 1981, Imelda wanted a grand event that in her eyes would make Manila the cultural center of the East. At a press conference for the event, she stressed that the Philippines is in a strategic location, both East and West, and thus was perfectly positioned to be an international marketplace for films. The date for the film festival was then set for January 18, 1982. It's unclear why or how this particular date was chosen, but a suitable venue for envisioned film festival needed to be built. The book Edifice Complex by Gerard Lico stated that Imelda wanted the building to recapture the grandeur of the Parthenon, and a decision was made to build the structure on reclaimed land from Manila Bay. Experts from UNESCO were consulted in the design, but as with most of Imelda's ambitious projects, the deadline to complete the center to her vision was tight. But what the First Lady wants, the First Lady gets. An Esquire story on the construction reported that a budget of $25 million was allocated to complete the project, an amount rumored to be meant for the new wing of the Philippine General Hospital. Then, an army of laborers were hired and rotated on three shifts across 24 hours of frenetic construction activity. Esquire Philippines listed the number of construction workers to be 4,000, while the New York Times reported that up to 8,000 were on site. To complete the grand lobby alone would have taken 6 weeks. It was finished in 72 hours by 1,000 workers. Given the rush, rumored faulty planning, and lack of precautions in completing the structure in time for the opening, what happened next seemed inevitable. Before we proceed, let's hear a quick word from our fellow podcasters from Podcast Network Asia.
Hi, this is Rika.
Hi, this is JC. So you like listening to podcasts?
Try listening to ours. It's called The Hala Hala Show.
Yeah, we talk about X, Y, and Z.
It's called Our Lives.
Yeah, also the trending topics. We talk about what's going on in the world, and we'll read some of your fan mail if you send it to us.
Ooh, fan mail. I never thought that we would have fan mail.
Yeah.
But we're here with two.
Yes, and it's available wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you listen to all your favorite podcasts, to any of your Podcast Network Asia shows as well. So after listening to this one, why don't you give us a try?
Please, go listen to our show, okay?
Slurp on.
Slurpers.
At 3 a.m. on November 17th, scaffolding on the fourth floor collapsed and trapped workers on shift in quick-drying cement. Esquire Philippines stated that the problem started when quick-drying cement was poured on each floor without waiting for the layers to dry. At the time, details of the resulting disaster were so harrowing that a media blackout was instituted to prevent any more information from coming out to the public. Reportedly, Benny Benitez, the appointed project supervisor and wife of Imelda's assistant minister, Conrado Benitez, ordered the site roped off as soon as she was notified of the collapse. Nena Benigno's first-hand account of the incident would give us a clearer, albeit distressing, picture of what transpired. In an interview with Rogue magazine about the enduring nightmare of the film center, Benigno recounted,
From a distance, I could see people in stretchers being carried out, frozen in cement. When I got there, they were still digging people out. The cement was not completely hard, and there was a guy that they were trying to keep from going into shock. Half of his body was buried. He was alive, but half buried. To keep him awake, alert, and not go into coma or shock, they kept him singing Christmas songs.
Urgent life-saving decisions needed to be made to secure the trapped and injured construction workers, but the Marcos regime was more concerned with drafting an official statement first. During the media blackout, neither press nor rescuers were permitted on site. It would be 9 hours later that emergency responders were allowed back to the scene of the accident. By then, 168 workers had died, mostly buried in the cement that had already hardened. According to Esquire Philippines, it was a gruesome scene of bodies sticking out of the cement. Jackhammers were used to drill some of the corpses out. In her book, Imelda and the Clans, Beatriz Romualdez Francia stated that only 35 bodies were exhumed. And after Imelda compensated the families of the buried workers, construction resumed. Allegedly, Imelda was concerned that exhuming all of the corpses would only delay her project even more, so the supervisors in charge of the project continued work as normal. If you can call building a site on what was essentially a fresh graveyard normal, construction workers were drilling out corpses and sawing off limbs of the dead as they resumed the frantic pace of the construction. Mila Lurin, head marketing at the Manila International Film Festival, said on a Rogue interview,
"I was told that they just cut up all the ones that were exposed, remove and build over, which is why the seats are very steep. It was a rush job. So these people were just, you know, they had to finish it, period."
Betty Romulo's account of the incident in her book, Inside the Palace, indicated that it was Betty Benitez who would give the final order to pour cement over the bodies. She recounted that the wives and mothers of the men had come to claim their loved ones, and when they couldn't, placed the curse on Betty. Months after the tragic accident, Benny Benitez was on her way to Tagaytay with a certain Odi Corpus, a former president of the University of the Philippines, when their car ran off the road on a curve and smashed on a tree. Corpus survived. Betty did not. In George Licon's book, The Edifice Complex, in spite of the tragic incident, the Parthenon-like Manila Film Center was finished 15 minutes before opening, amid clouds of thick construction dust in an unfinished roof which was temporarily covered with hundreds of square meters of fabric. After the dust settled, rumors of ghost sightings and hauntings would rise from the ashes of the disaster, and many Filipinos refused to work inside the building or watch the festival movies. Betty Romulo claimed that apart from the previous exorcism attempts, Jaime Marcos called in a medium to communicate with the dead. While inside, the medium apparently went into a trance. Normally, the medium only spoke in his native dialect, but during the trance, the medium spoke in English and said, "Now there are 169. Betty is with us." Another version of this incident recounts that it was the Igorot shaman who went into a trance during the aforementioned Kanyao ceremony to deliver this chilling revelation. Unsurprisingly, given the timing of Betty's death, speculations of what happened generated fictionalized stories of the moment that she died. According to a PhilStar piece published in 2001, Diodoro C. Benigno related rumored stories of an eerie tale that occurred at the curve, which led to the accident. Apparently, the ghosts of the Manila Film Center appeared, dressed in black and sightless. They pointed spectral fingers at Betty as she passed away, like accusing branches from the great beyond. Ghosts pointing their fingers at their killers may sound like the plot to a scary movie, but it's not entirely fiction. In another eerie circumstance of murder and ghosts, we now look into the story of murdered Filipina respiratory therapist Teresita Basa, who, on the evening of February 1977, would be found naked, burned, and stabbed at her apartment in Chicago, Illinois. Months later, details from her trial were so strange that it's still considered one of Chicago's most peculiar murder cases and was famously dubbed the voice from the grave.
Scared yet? If not, listen to the concluding episode of The Haunting, Murder from Beyond the Grave on the last 24 hours and learn more about this unusual but real-life ghost story.
Don't miss out on new episodes. Like and subscribe to The Last 24 Hours or follow the podcast on Facebook at Historia ni Jet, where you can get in touch, tell me your thoughts, suggest cases, or just say hello. I'll do my best to get back to you.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.